Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hi, this is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. And thank you so much for joining me again at Hack the Entrepreneur. We are just getting rolling with the show, and this next guest is just an amazing person that I'm so excited to get to talk to, and I'm so excited to share this conversation with you. Julian Smith is our guest today. Julian is the CEO of Breather, which is an on-demand space company, as well as a New York Times bestselling author of 3 books. I am looking so forward to sharing this conversation. So how about we just jump right into it, and let's see if we can hack Julian. So welcome back to the show. Today I have Julian Smith, a fellow Canadian, with me, and I'm really excited about this. So welcome to the show, Julian.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So Julian, let's jump right into it now. Can you tell me specifically what you do that you think other people don't that has been a big contributor to your success?
Oh man, this is so direct.
It is.
I have a problem where I think that everyone is capable of doing the things that, you know, maybe, I don't know, the most productive of us do. And only recently have I come to the conclusion that life is not like that or something, and that you need to kind of like almost train yourself or change your mindset or some other thing in order to become this way. So the only way that I could think of that I'm this way is that I am okay with trial and failure. And one of the ways that I usually describe it is I'm okay with something being ugly on the way to it being beautiful or something like that. I'm okay with the parts that suck.
Wait, let's hear that again.
And one of the ways that I usually describe it is I'm okay with something being ugly on the way to it being beautiful or something like that. I'm okay with the parts that suck.
And that's the hack. I like how you preface it, but this is probably, if I was an American, I would probably tell you that's your very Canadian way. Because you're so humble. And you don't want to say that you have a way, but I think you do have a way. So what's a project you're working on right now? It can be Breather or it could be something just personally that you're trying to do. But what's something right now? What is the biggest doubt or fear that you've had within this project?
Oh, man. So, I mean, like, this is the biggest thing. My company that I work on, Breather, is the biggest thing that I've ever done. So, you know, someone told me recently that when you're an entrepreneur, you have no choice but to grow on a personal level because you're dealing with so much stuff that you don't know how to do, or you're dealing with so many, you know, personal issues or whatever, that you have no choice but to grow into kind of becoming a better person because you're having more awkward conversations than you ever had before. You have to sell more than you ever have before. You have to be introspective to see what kind of stuff you should be doing but aren't because you're anxious about it or something. So there's a great deal of self-examination that should go on there. So personally, on my level, I just continuously ask myself, like, am I moving fast enough? Am I working hard enough on this? Could I, you know, one of my current problems is I'm only now learning how to hire people. So I'm spending a lot of time, wasting a lot of time hiring or spinning my wheels instead of just hiring properly. So it's like, it's a really interesting thing because this is just one problem out of many, but you're constantly encountering new things, especially when you put yourself in this place where you have no choice but to succeed. That's you put your back against the wall on purpose because you decided to start some kind of insanely ambitious company. So now it's like, okay, go. And you've never done any of it before. So it's actually a good position because then you force yourself into growth. You have no choice but to keep moving.
Do you do this often? Do you put your back to the wall on purpose?
Yeah, that's the name of my blog, right? The name of my blog is In Over Your Head. And actually, I came up with that blog about in 2004 and the 2003, 2004. And the reason that was the case is because I had just started podcasting and I didn't know how to do it. And I think in the first episode, which was literally November 2004 when podcasting had just been invented, I said something like, well, here I am, I'm in over my head. And so this became the sort of dominant theme of my life, is that I'm constantly doing things that I have no idea how to do, and then heading into a place where, oh, okay, now I kind of understand how this works, and just kind of like turning it around for myself from pure raw incompetence to a level of competence that allows me to do well on it or something like that. So yeah, I would say that's a total, I'm doing that all the time.
Doubts as entrepreneurs, as humans, right? Doubts are things that always come up, but they're always that, I see no other way that they can come to you really, is then just that voice in your head telling you all the dumb things you've done, all the mistakes you've made, all the reasons why you can't succeed at what you're trying to do. I'm assuming you have that voice sometimes. And is there a way that you deal with that voice? Like, yeah. I know some people step outside of that voice. Some people talk back to it. Some people try and just wipe it out.
Yeah, I actually speak out loud. So for me, it's not a voice, okay? So, and I don't know if for other people it is, but for me, it's not. It's just like a feeling, and it's in my body. So I can really feel it in certain, like I can feel it in my chest, or I can feel it in some other part of my body as a sort of tension. But I'll be processing it. And the way that it really turns out, it's really interesting that I ended up starting my whole career on the internet or whatever as a podcaster, is because I'm very verbal and I can process a lot of interesting ideas by just speaking out loud. So what it also allows me to do is it allows me to kind of ask myself questions. So I'll be like, so what is it exactly that you're afraid of? And then I'll be like, well, I don't know whether or not I'm making a good hire here. And if I'm wrong, it could really screw me up. Okay. But then what would help you actually solve that problem? Well, I don't know. I could have more candidates, you know, and I could do this in a written way if I wanted to, but I don't. and for some reason, if I do it verbally, it really, really works for me. And I can do that with almost any problem that I have. So it's really interesting, because it's actually totally like, it makes me, if I was doing it in public, I'd probably look like a crazy person, but it really, it's a really effective technique for me.
So you're teaching everybody who doesn't want to act like a crazy person speaking out loud just to basically start a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
With the doubts and wondering if you're wrong, obviously being an entrepreneur, you're wrong a lot. And we have to accept this, I think. Can you walk us through how to be wrong?
How to be wrong. Oh, okay. That's interesting. So let me think about it for a second. I could walk you through maybe an example or something like that. What I'm trying to explain is start with the smallest. Actually, here's how I do it. So you know how Michelangelo's David was built, and he always says this thing like, "Well, I saw the statue inside the block of marble, and I slowly chipped away at what was not the statue, and so he ended up with Michelangelo's David or whatever." I'm misquoting this, but. I kind of do the same thing. I have a general idea around what it is that I'm going to be working on, but I don't really know what it is. This happened with Flinch, actually, is that there was this like idea, and it was like we were just writing. At the beginning, it was Brogan who was working on it, Chris Brogan, you can go to chrisbrogan.com and see his blog there. And then Seth Godin, who is our editor. And then it really progressively became clear that it was really my book. So then it became just me and Seth working on it. And it wasn't even really clear what it was that this book was intended to be, but it really became clear relatively quickly, because I was going through a lot of different stuff. Like it was like weightlifting and doing a bunch of like weird physical exercises, and it became really clear that it was about like pain. But even then, there was no name for it. There was no clarity about what the book was going to be about. There was no shape to it at all. But what happens is and I did it with my company as well. I knew that my company Breather was around space, but I didn't know exactly what it was. And so what I do is I progressively move from a very vague thing, progressively removing components of it until I've reached the smallest possible component that I can. And the reason that I reach the smallest possible component that I can, in the case of Flinch, it's like practically like a blog post. It's 15,000 words because it's really quick to digest and absorb and use. In the case of Breather, it's small rooms in a network across the city. And the reason that that's effective is because the rooms can fit into any space. They're almost like parasitic, right? And so same thing, anything that works has to be very small. So I chip away at things until they're almost gone. And so I think the way that I end up being wrong, or whatever it is you want to call it, is that I start with a very big thing, and then I progressively remove the wrong parts of it, being conscious of the fact that they're wrong. And then I do that until I get to the smallest possible version of what it is that I want to do. And then I go out and I do that thing. And that works really well for me, because generally, I heard an idea from a guy recently, and he's like, oh yeah, it was in Melbourne, and I started this cafe, but it was also an antique store, and it was also a restaurant. And you're like, actually, it did quite well. But in a lot of cases, people come up with really big ideas that are too big and aren't worth doing, because it's really not clear when some, like, what it is or what people want it to be, or what the things need to be very, very small for them to work. They need to be digestible. So that's why I process things that way. And it's really worked well for me in the past.
Nice. I like it. Does your David, per se, ever turn out differently than you imagine it?
Yeah, all the time. Because it's actually not me that's deciding. It's the market that's deciding. So I was watching one of those episodes of Cosmos, right, with Neil deGrasse Tyson last night. And I had this, like, I think a lot of sort of abstractions. And so he's talking about how the way that the whatever creature evolves over time is really not up to that creature. It's really up to the ecosystem. Well, it's kind of the same with your idea. Like, your idea is really not up to you. You have a thing that you want to do, but if you sit and you make that thing too precise, you're probably going to fail, because you won't know what the market demands. Your head will be too full of what you want. And that's not really, like, it doesn't really matter what you want. What really matters is what the market wants. So it could be market. The market could be anything, right? It could be you having a conversation and saying, well, I want to talk to you about this thing. Having a tough conversation with a friend of yours or something. But in reality, it's not really about what you want the conversation to be. It's about what the ecosystem demands, which in this case is the conversation, and how the conversation needs to go for you to get what you want. So you really have to be sort of a good listener in all of those cases. You have to listen to the ecosystem. You know, obviously the bear has no choice but to listen to the ecosystem and become what the ecosystem demands, or it dies out as a species. And then you have no choice but to listen to your friend in the conversation, because if you don't, you're never going to get across what you need to get across. So I always think about what you want to do, or your business or whatever it is, as being partially yours, and then partially, if it's succeeding, because you're able to listen to the ecosystem and adapt to it.
I like that. So just fluidity and movement. You got to...
The ability to destroy anything, John, right? Like, being willing to really eliminate anything, no matter how good you feel about it. Because the reality is that a thing that it either lives or dies, right? And yeah. The state of most companies at any given time is dead. The state of most people at any given time is dead. And so you're in a place where you have a choice, basically, whether your thing lives or dies. And that decision is not based on how much you like it. It's based on, you know, how far it can jump, and how far it can jump. You know, it's really based on the ability for your thing to adapt. So more than going into sort of, it's really possible to go into cliches with, like, agility and, like, you know, a lean startup or whatever, some other kind of thing that's really popular. But the real thing is, like, there's no emotional attachment to the thing that you're doing, and being willing to destroy it at any time and rebuild.
Is this something you would use in a project? Like, is there, like, you're halfway through a project, or a quarter of the way through, or 99% of the way through, you've put your heart and soul into it, you've done everything to adapt. Is there a spark or a feeling, say, in your chest or your stomach that tells you, okay, this project's wrong?
Yeah, no, actually, yes, I have had that. I've had that happen multiple times. And books have happened that way, and companies have happened that way. All these things have happened that way. But actually, it's not like this is wrong. It's more like you come across through some total accident, you come across something that is like 100 times better or 100 times more appropriate to the situation. And so you look at the two alternatives. Previously, you only had one alternative, which was the thing that you were pouring your heart and soul into, like you were saying. Now you have this second one, and you look at the second one, and you're like, oh, shit, I'm just going to have to flush like 9 months of work. You don't really have a choice, right? Looking at the second one, you're like, okay, this is clearly better. So, and the way that you learn these things, by the way, is you learn them by being a student of whatever it is. You know, like I was a student of technology for years before I started a venture-backed company. And it was really instructive because I was able to watch different platforms live and die. You know, think about Foursquare, just the new version just came out yesterday. So think about that and how that evolved in response to, let's say, other like things like Twitter or FriendFeed or all these other sort of social products that were out at the time. And you can really learn from those things and learn from current, let's say, mobile apps or something like that, and see what people really want and how ideas catch and how they become successful. So it's not about going, oh, this is wrong and I can't tell why, although that might be true too. It's also about being able to look at a new thing and getting a sense from previous experience of, oh yeah, this is clearly like 10 times better, 10 times more right. And sure enough, like in the case of my company, in the case of Breeder, I was working on a previous version of the idea, because remember we talked about it being space, just space, and not really clear about what version of space it would be. As soon as I turned it into the smallest possible version of space, which is the company that I currently have, then it was like, boom, I raised $1.5 million in capital. And it's like, boom, now I had rock star employees that wanted to work for me and that moved across the country to work for me. And like, it's just immediately you can see the value of an idea when it's working, because it is happening 10 times faster than you thought it would happen, versus the other one, which is like, oh, this is hard, slogging, and tough.
Okay, you mentioned work a lot there. You're working in a startup company that has employees and actual like space you rent and such now. So this is different than you with a blog or you writing or you just at home kind of working when you want, right? So how often do you work at this point? Do you work a standard work schedule?
I work all the time. I work constantly. we've raised multiple rounds of funding. We have a lot of money in the bank that has been given to us by investors who believe in what we're doing. And those are the same kinds of people who invested in companies like Uber and Twitter and Facebook and so on, right? And so there's a few things there, which is one, it's like an opportunity. So you're looking at something and you're trying to create the biggest opportunity that you can. And once you have the ability to create that opportunity for yourself, like I'm there right now. Now it's like, okay, so go on all cylinders, because you're probably not going to get another shot like this. And then the second one is when you've taken a bunch of money in, it's your responsibility to take that money in and sort of do the utmost that you can, having been given so much cash to try and create something by people. It's a responsibility. So it's a totally different world than the world of writing books and blog posts and consulting and speaking and other things like that.
So yeah, it is a completely different world. And I mean, it's hard for you to just go back to that other world now at this point.
It feels very small. Right. It's like everybody decides what it is that they want. You know, this guy, Srini, he does this blog called the Unmistakable Podcast. Unmistakable.
Yes.
So I met him a long time ago. And this is this kind of dude who's like born to do these shows. And maybe in a way people thought that I was born to do these shows. In a way I was for like 5 years. I did podcasts. I blogged. I spoke. I wrote three books. But people evolve over time. And at this case, I can't really imagine doing anything else. I really sort of think of this as being my shot. And so you'll see when that happens in your life, you'll just be like, oh, here's this new thing. It's totally different from what I used to do. And I guess I'm throwing myself into this. And it really happened sort of in an organic way.
I guess that's how it should happen. Okay, let's go to habits. Mm-hmm. Can you walk me through your morning routine? Like specifically, say your first 30 minutes of your day?
So there's actually a blog about this, not about my morning routine, but you should take a look at it. It's called My Morning Routine, if I remember. Let me just Google it right now. Okay. My Morning Routine blog. Yeah, sure enough, mymorningroutine.com. So you can look that up. This is not my – it's just an interesting blog that has all these people's morning routines in it. Mine is pretty – if I do it right, I wake up at around 6 or 6:30 in the morning. Then I basically go into this sort of programmed mode where I do like a series of activities that are all sort of dictated by my phone. My whole life is inside my phone. And the reason for that is because it's always with me and it's never, I mean, it might run out of battery, but it's not going to, you know, light itself on fire or something like that. I'm not going to lose it. And it's really portable. So I can put all of my habits, all of my to-dos, all of my things into my phone. So it's really, really important that I have that. So I've got like 10 different sort of morning activities, like meditation and then, you know, flossing and all these other things that I do. And then I just sort of cycle through them. I've done them so many times that I just do them by rote without even thinking about it. So once I floss, it's like, okay, now I weigh myself. Great. Now I open the mail. Great. And I just keep doing that till about probably 7:30 in the morning. But then by that point, I think around that time, I'm free writing, depending on the day, because that's a really important part of what I do. I've been free writing for something like 10 years, which if you don't know what that is, that's like taking a piece of paper or taking like a computer, like a text file, and just writing into it. I do it till I'm at 1,000 words or till I've completed a few pages. And then that sort of lets me process my thinking for the day and what I'm planning on doing and what I find worthwhile to do for that day. Then I go to work. And then I've got like 15 people that I work with at Breather. And we just keep doing that thing till like whatever hour it gets done. Then I come home. And then we go to the gym, like me and my girlfriend lift heavy weights. We do it according to a bunch of protocols, like starting strength, lean gains, and a few other sort of well-known kind of internet lifting protocols. And then we come home and then we like chill out. We watch Cosmos or something. It's a pretty normal day. It's just like I get a lot done because I think the reason that I get a lot done is because I'm high leverage. Is that I only take action on activities that will perform 100x of their value. And I try to delegate everything else. This is something that I got from a dude called David Maester, who's a really well-known management consultant. He would say, if you have the ability to delegate an activity, it is your responsibility to do so. He does it because he bills by the hour like a lawyer. So he would say, it's more responsible to your clients to make it happen through the most affordable possible means. That's one reason. But the other one is that it makes you 100 times more productive, is to always be delegating things that you shouldn't be doing.
You have a business now with offices, I believe, even and such, and people. So, I mean, from my perspective or someone listening who is in the phase of where you were with podcasting and blogging and writing books, at that time, were you still in this David Maester frame of mind of delegating everything you could and using leverage points?
So, but in a different way. Like the way that I saw it then, I did use it, but because I ran a company just like building websites and I was just selling like crazy amounts of stuff online at one point. And that was always sort of me viewing leverage as being like, I'm going to use the internet to globally reach an audience that I couldn't reach normally from, you know, my apartment or whatever, and sell like millions of dollars worth of stuff online. And so it really is like, I'm always looking towards finding the least, you know, programmers is this sort of adage around programmers where it's like the lazy programmers are the best programmers. And the reason that they say that is because lazy programmers find smart ways around things by writing like five lines of code, instead of really laborious ways to do it where they'll write 50 lines of code for no reason. So you'd rather find the guy who just thinks about it a lot and then who eventually writes the 5 lines of code, and that becomes like WikiLeaks, right? It's an amount of leverage that's so powerful that it's almost immeasurable. So that's kind of the way that I think about my work, is always going, I'm going to make something happen, but it's not going to be around, you know, it's going to be the highest leverage, highest, most effective, productive activity that I can. Otherwise, I'll delegate it to someone else that's better at it.
Is there a habit right now you're trying to develop within yourself, but you're struggling to adopt into your life?
I mean, there's a million of them. Maybe I'm trying to quit coffee, let's say. As an example, I'm not really good at it, but that's something that I'm trying to develop. Sure.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Quitting coffee.
I know. Yeah.
It's sad.
I know it is.
Excellent. Okay, well, I'd love for this conversation to go on and on because I'm really enjoying it, but I think we should wrap it up because we're at that time for everyone. I have one final question that I would like to ask you, and it's kind of special, I guess, because you wrote Flinch, and Flinch has been a book that constantly comes back into my life, and I think that it should to others. I will link to it for everyone because you can still download it for free off Amazon, which is amazing. But is there a book that comes back into you, business or anything, that every 6 months or a year you just have to pick it up and either flip through it or read it fully just to kind of ground yourself and center yourself again?
Yeah, I think it's a book called I'm just Googling it right now, so I have the exact title. It's not how good you are, it's how good you want to be. Have you ever read that book before?
Oh my God, you ruined it for me, but yes. I've got this thing where each person I'm interviewing, I'm getting their physical address, which I'm going to get from you in a few minutes after we get off this, and I'm mailing them that book for coming on my show, because I feel like nobody's heard of that book, and I love that book.
Yeah, so I think we put that book in every breather location, actually.
Oh,
so
that's awesome.
But thank you for that. You could send me some other secret thing.
I will.
Flinch was really based on that book because they are both so short and so sort of really about the emotion that you create by reading the book. And actually, that's one of the things I find really interesting about some books is you can take them and they will deliberately create an emotion for you. And then you can use that emotion for your own purposes. And It's Not How Good You Are, It's How Good You Want to Be by Paul Arden is one of those books where you're just reading it. And then at the end, you're like, I'm amazing. I can go out there and do anything I want.
Yes, I love it. And maybe actually now that you mention it, how Flinch was based on that, I wonder if that's where I actually was introduced to it.
But definitely, like, if you liked one, you definitely like the other.
Right. And I remember like your kind of launch going into Flinch. So I wonder if maybe there was something mentioned somewhere and I was like, oh, I got to check that out too. Because I can't remember where I was introduced to it, but last time I saw it at a store, I bought all the copies I had and I've given it out to people. And now I actually have a shipment waiting for me of like 40 copies of the book. So that's awesome. So thank you so much, Julian, for your time. I really, really appreciate it. This has been an amazing conversation.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for having me.
Excellent. So where's somewhere that people can go and find out more about you at this time?
I blog on Medium sometimes, on medium.com. Also, I have my own blog, which is a little bit out of date, but it's inoveryourhead.net. And then the name of my company is breather.com. So you just Google my name if you feel like. If you Google it with the wrong lettering, it comes to a famous YouTube star. I'm not that guy. I'm the other one.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. This has been great, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Damn, that guy is smart. And so humble. I guess it's that's the Canadian in us, I guess. So thank you so much for taking time out of your day to hang out with us here for a half hour at Hack the Entrepreneur. It's been a lot of fun and we have a lot of more amazing guests coming up very soon. Now what I need you to do is I need you to go and check out the new website. Hacktheentrepreneur.com has everything, all the hacks that we're going to be gathering up will be listed there and the show notes from each of these shows. I'm going to start blogging over there and just sharing with you what I'm learning from both running my own business and then starting this new podcast. And it's going to be just a great spot. So hacktheentrepreneur.com. And if you want to find this specific show, it would be hacktheentrepreneur.com/show2. And that will take you straight to Julian Smith. The website was made, it's a WordPress site made by a great friend of mine, Nick Davis. If you need any WordPress work done at all, he is the man that will help you. NickDavis.co is his website. And yeah, just tell him I sent you and he'll help you out. Trust me. I am John Nastor, and this has been Hack the Entrepreneur.